The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Ray Bjorklund. Ray is the president of Birch Grove Consulting, delivering awesome analysis and inspired insight. Ray, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Roger.
I'm looking forward to the conversation. Now we have three topics, or three big buckets. And I know you like to put things into buckets. But first we're going to talk a little bit about shared services, at least in the procurement world, and what's sort of going on there, or just to take a snapshot picture, look at that. We're also going to talk about the budget and what it means for contractors, and maybe take a deep dive on a particular department just to get some sense of what's going on there. And lastly, we'll talk about the just released reorg of the federal government, which is a lot to tackle. But I have all the confidence in the world, Ray, and in our ability, and primarily your ability, to do it. So let's start first with the shared services segment or analysis. And I guess first, from a procurement perspective, we think big picture like GSA, it's a shared services organization, frankly, at the end of the day. And there's decentralized ordering, centralized ordering. Can you just talk about what goes into the thought process for shared services? I know you love the term comparative advantage. So I'm going to turn it over to you. Go ahead, Ray.
All right. Thanks, Roger. Shared services in the procurement domain is what I call assisted acquisition. And GSA, has an element of their organization that does feature assisted acquisition. But there are many other agencies across the government where that kind of work is done on behalf of the requiring agencies. And you mentioned comparative advantage. It's one of the reasons that I kind of introduced that in the conversation is a reflection on some economic laws. I'm no economist. But
you don't play one like you didn't sleep. But what's that? I don't know what that hotel. I can't do ads on it. But go ahead.
Right. Okay. So, Ricardo's law of comparative advantage, came well before our time. Said that countries can figure out what they do best, and can use other countries' capabilities for doing things that they might do better. And that's the same thing with shared services procurement, which is assisted acquisition. And the reason why I bring it up in the terms of comparative advantage, one of the elements of comparative advantage is that it isn't necessarily cheaper to use an outside element, agency, or capability to do your work, but it might make good business sense because it's more effective. And there's less risk of getting in trouble. And there's less, there's an improved ability to actually obligate the dollars and move on. And you pay a fee for that typically in the assisted acquisition environment.
Right. So, and it's almost like that's the return on investment. The government doesn't measure their return on investment in the same way the private sector does, but there are those elements like more effective outcomes, that ultimately actually might result in savings as well.
Well, savings because, maybe you don't end up with a protest after the award, or maybe the GAO doesn't come in and audit you in a way that's, deconstructive rather than constructive. And consequently, that means that in the long run, it probably is a cheaper solution. Not necessarily. And sometimes you got to pay money up front to get something done more effectively, not necessarily more efficiently, more effectively, because maybe you have a mission requirement, something that's very urgent.
Right. Well, when what you see that in terms of patterns and what folks think about with regard to their decisions to use assisted services or not, or use different contract vehicles, what are some of the key sort of factors or considerations that you see out there that people are looking at?
Well, in the FAR, there's reference to the Economy Act, which is a pretty old piece of legislation. That's one piece of it, but it isn't. You don't necessarily invoke the Economy Act every time that you make a decision to use assisted acquisition. Sometimes it is because that servicing agency, we can talk a little bit about the definition of requiring agency and servicing agency, but that servicing agency has contract vehicles under their control that can get your job done more efficiently and more effectively. Sometimes that servicing agency is in a better position to, because of their program management talent, to actually execute on your dollars, where you may not have the PM talent in your organization to actually do that. And, you know, sometimes, this is some of the negative aspects, sometimes an agency, a requiring agency, will use assisted acquisition because they really hate their procurement organization because they claim their procurement organization is totally ineffectual.
Right, or it doesn't do exactly what they want. Is that another way of saying that?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, so requiring agency is as it sounds in terms of the definition?
Yes. And so, you know, sometimes you have to kind of look at who the customer is, who the user is. Customers usually that element of the government that actually executes the contract. It's typically in the user's organization. So that is the requiring agency. The user has the requirement. And these are actually terms that are defined in federal procurement.
And the service.
And the servicing agency is that agency that is taking your money and your direction and your requirement and executing on it.
Okay. And then decentralized ordering, what is that?
Decentralized ordering is in the situation where usually referring to a assisted acquisition environment where the user with the requiring agency is using somebody else's procurement vehicles and that other agency is doing their ordering for them.
Okay.
So an example like that would be, you know, GSA's assisted acquisition organization because
AAS,
because they are actually, well, they can use any vehicles that they can get their hands on, but they do have their own portfolio of contract vehicles. And
like some, a Lion or Oasis that they use. Yep.
Yeah, and connections and, you know, the various telecom contracts. So they are using their contract vehicles on behalf of a requiring agency.
Okay. And then centralized. And what's the sort of in that area? Have you seen any, the volume's going up, right? Is it not? I mean, there's increases.
Yeah, that's one thing that's kind of interesting. While you would say, okay, under this current administration, maybe the agencies are kind of hunkering down and they're doing whatever they need to do within their own resources. That doesn't seem to be happening as much. We're going to have to see how the numbers come out in 2018. But for the comparison of 2017 to 18, under centralized ordering, I can't read the number here, 5%, a 5% increase over annually. And in the decentralized ordering environment, there's a 7% increase.
Right. We forgot to define what's centralized ordering?
Yeah. And centralized ordering is where your own requiring agency is its own servicing agency.
Okay.
So basically doing it in-house.
Okay.
You may be using somebody else's contract, like a GSA schedule, but
you're
doing it
yourself.
But you're
executing itself, yeah.
Okay. Centralized.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So decentralized, somebody does it on your behalf, and they use whatever contract vehicle they can find, and centralized is you do it yourself, but you may use somebody else's contract to do it as well. Sort of like, yeah, okay. Sort of like the schedules work where people yes. place order. Yeah. Okay.
Or NASA Soup.
Yeah,
you know? NASA Soup. NASA Soup, you know, in that case, that program office, under very limited set of circumstances, might actually do the servicing agency procurement on your behalf.
Right. So thoughts on what contractors need to think about with regard to the, you know, assisted services and shared services here?
Yeah, I know that this stuff is very arcane and, you know, sometimes, and it's pretty well defined in part two of the FAR, you know, but what I often see is that business developers who are trying to follow the money aren't really aware of some of these terms. Now, some of the government agencies aren't aware of the terms either, particularly in the, you know, user community who's not dealing day-to-day with FAR right. and with procurement policy.
So you need to understand the language to be able to follow where the money's going? Sort of,
yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's important. And Ray will pick up on that when we come back from the break. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He is the president of Birch Grove Consulting, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. He's president of Birch Grove Consulting. Awesome analysis, inspired insight, Ray. And we'll continue with your awesome analysis and inspired insight. When we took the break, we were talking a little bit about some of the things that contractors need to think about with regard to assisted services, and I'm going to let you pick up where you left off.
Yeah, and what I find, and this is kind of an amusing side observation here, that for years, BD folks, business development folks, sales folks, would talk about following the money, following the money. Well, we figured out how to follow the money, and now they say, well, we don't want to do it that way. So that's a whole nother topic. But part of following the money, part of understanding who your customer is, who your user is, and maybe who the contracting officer is, knowing how an agency buys, what their preferences are for using inside resources, which is typically centralized.
Yep.
Or using outside resources, which is often assisted acquisition and decentralized ordering, and which agencies they go to actually get their job done. And then you look at whoever owns the contracts, whoever's going to be executing the contracts, what contracts do they have access to in their portfolio? And what kinds of purchasing methods do they actually use? So if you've got a situation where your user is an agency A, but the actual procurement is going to be done in agency B, you better understand how agency B does business.
Who are the top 10 consumers of assisted services or assisted acquisition?
Okay, I actually went back
last year, 2017.
Yeah, 2017. Defense agencies in general, and particularly Defense Human Resources Agency and DARPA tend to use outside help for their acquisitions. Next on the pecking order is the Army, then the Air Force, then the Navy, then Department of Commerce.
So I just stopped. So the DOD organizations are like the top four. And does that reflect, well, first of all, the volume of work they have and whether they're in their organic, their own central infrastructures aren't, you know, it's not, the resources aren't balanced, so they're looking for outside help, or are there folks that just do it better? Or is it a little bit of both?
I think it's mostly the latter. It's again, comparative advantage, finding right. folks that can do something better. And when you look at a lot of the DOD folks, particularly in the military services, are actually in doing contingency contracting,
right.
you know, which is not something you're going to typically turn to an assisted acquisition environment. But
so they're know, like they're, supporting the current operations yeah, right, versus mission. Long, you know, sort of like investments in IT infrastructure.
Yes.
Those kind of, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Right. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You said after yeah, Navy?
Then after that, yeah, Navy and Commerce and mostly NOAA in Commerce. And see, that's important to kind of understand. Commerce is a big agency.
Right, so you got to know who, which yes. department with their organization within it. Yep.
Then Homeland Security, HHS, Justice, NASA, which is it's kind of an interesting twist. Mm-hmm. And then EPA, which, of course, is the poster child of federal budgeting these days.
Right, or budget cutting, right? I mean, if you're from this administration.
Yeah, but, you know, I was looking the other day at the reorg plan.
Yes.
And it says that they're going to give a whole bunch of new work to EPA.
Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. And you also mentioned budget. So why don't we turn a little bit to talk a little bit about, you know, that's your true, like, you know, domain expertise. Expertise in terms of analysis of what's going on out there in the federal marketplace. So I'm just going to say, okay, what about the budget, Ray?
I call it a time for cautious optimism. I'm really pleasantly surprised, you know, that this administration, despite all the rhetoric about doing cut, is proposing substantial increases in spending that will, and maybe it has something to do with the concept of or say the ideology of believing that things outsourced are cheaper than things insourced. It could be that. But in generally, that while you look at the top line numbers and they're kind of under control, the contractor addressable spending is actually creeping up a bit. And what we've seen, particularly since sequestration period of 2013, even a year or two before that, you know, we were seeing very, very flat, some cases negative budgets for contractor addressable spending, which means money that goes on contracts or is intended to go on contracts. You know, what we're seeing now in this 2019 budget, which came out in February, we're seeing you know, a few percentage points increase in spending, contract addressable spending, and I haven't seen that in a long time. So that's my cautious optimism because, you know, it depends on certainly how does the requiring agency execute, you know, and backing up from that, how is it going to be appropriated? Backing up from that, how is it going to be authorized?
Right.
So there's still lots of questions to go and, you know, well, sort of one of the lead pieces of legislation, the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, you know, that seems to be making decent progress on the Hill right now. You know, and that in some ways sort of sets the tone for the other authorization activities. And then second to that, the appropriations, because theoretically you're not supposed to be appropriating dollars, deciding how many dollars are going to be put in the treasury in specific accounts, unless the programmatics are authorized.
Right. There's authorization and then the appropriation.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, you just reminded me, it's like, I haven't thought about in a while, like the, you know, the sequestration days, right? And, I did a lot of shows about, government shutdown and what contractors need to think about and talking to your CIO. It seems like a long time ago, but it really is not a long time ago, right?
Yeah, No, and guess what? It could happen again.
Well, yeah, even in September it could, theoretically, right?
Well, not necessarily sequestration, but certainly
shutdown.
Right?
Yep, that's what I was referring to. I'm sorry. And then one of the things you've observed about things is that the two-year budget deal is not a two-year budget deal. What does that mean?
when things got dicey earlier this year.
I want to say up is not down. Up is down and down is up. I don't know. 2 years is not 2 years. Okay.
When people got excited earlier this year because we're getting toward the ceiling, debt ceiling and potential for shutdown and potential for running out of money. Ultimately, there was a budget deal and everybody got excited and thinking that was a two-year budget. No, it is not, you know, because you have to budget every year. Sometimes they've got appropriations in that budget that might last for several years.
Right.
And in some civilian agencies, many civilian agencies, some of the appropriations last until they're expended.
Expire or expended. Yeah.
You know, but every year there's going to be another budget. What the budget deal was resetting the budget cap, which still is a positive, constructive story for contractors. What really triggered this whole thing, when you step back and look at it, is the Trump administration submitted their 2019 budget. And that 2019 budget, which also has some of the adjustments to 2019 budget, asked for a lot of money for national security,
yes,
mostly in DOD. And of course, everybody in DOD in the contracting community gets really excited. And it's, again, reason for a cautious optimism. But that goes to the Hill. And despite the old days when they used to say, dead on arrival, mm-hmm, the budget dead on arrival.
Right.
Of course, you got the same party in the Hill versus and the White House. So it was like, okay, how do we accommodate this? Because we, in the majority in Congress, we ideologically like the idea of increased defense spending, and I call it broadly national security spending. But guess what? If you just take that at face value, that request at face value, you are now busting the cap that were set by the Budget Control Act 2011 and then modified, the thing that caused us to do
sequestration
in 2013. And so now the budget cap issue has been kicked downstream,
right,
and it's been increased. Well, you
and
have
they increase
to do
civilian too, right?
Yeah, you got to do a political deal to make that work. Yeah, and so the Democrats, who often favor a lot of the civilian agency spending, were able to negotiate a better position for the civilian agency. So those caps went up as well.
Right. And you know what? We got to stop right there, Ray. When we come back, well, you can go from the top line and talk downstream a little bit what it means for contractors in terms of addressable spend and increases, that sort of thing. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He's president of Birch Grove Consulting. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. He's president of Birch Grove Consulting. Awesome analysis and inspired insight. And when we took the break, Ray, you were talking about the caps being raised or busted or whatever you want to call the term, where additional defense or national security spending, the deal was cut to also increase civilian agency spending. So what does that mean in terms of dollars and, addressable for contractors, and where are we?
So when the civilian agencies were given some wiggle room because of the increase in caps or raising the cap, then the OMB submitted a supplemental budget request that reflected the 2-year budget deal. And so for the 2019 budget, they actually increased their spending, and they did it. It's about $6.8 billion in contractor addressable spending in civilian agencies. And so increase. And so you say, well, gee, defense is growing too. No, there was only one request in the supplemental for defense, and that was to move $20 billion from one account to another account. So net of it, there was a zero increase in defense. But then...
But they'd already asked for their increase, right? Or gotten increased.
Yeah, well, they'd asked for it. That's what, of course, triggered this whole situation with the 2-year budget deal. And then along with that, because you have a majority in Congress that is very defense prone,
focused,
friendly.
Yes.
Because you have that, then the authorization committees started pumping up the defense spending as well. And by my guess, in it, the House NDAA, which is still kind of fluttering through the system, it's kind of getting there, is probably another $3 to $3.5 billion in additional defense addressable spending. So what the authorizers are doing, which the appropriators will probably follow suit, Congress is actually pumping up the defense budget more than the president asked for. So, overall, that's...
I'm shocked. I'm surprised.
Well, this is, a good thing for contractors.
You're right. So, and the overall, which is the potentially, is it over about $900 billion in total across both defense and civilian?
Correct. it's about $902 billion when you add in all those other stuff. And, you know, people often look at the federal procurement data system and say, but it's only like $500 or $600 billion. Oh, there's a lot more spending that is not accounted for. I'm not even talking about deeply classified spending. I'm talking about things that just are not reported to the federal procurement data system.
So, and how's that divided between defense and civilian, that 900?
About half and half.
50-50.
Okay. Roughly. I mean, it's just about half-half. I don't have the hard numbers right in front of me. But that's what it normally is. And certainly from a services versus product perspective, so let me pull up that number. We're talking about $537 billion in services spending and contract spending, and about $372 billion in product spending. Products being everything from consumable, disposable, fungible stuff, all the way to enormous weapon systems.
Wow. So, and how big a, and what's the year to year increase sort of in percentage wise?
Yeah.
And addressable.
This is where, you know, and I'll kind of step back and talk about the excitement that came with the increased defense budget, because a lot of contractors, and there are a lot of them around town here that are in that defense sphere, they were very excited. And for the big platform developers and system integrators, it's pretty good number, because we're talking anywhere from 6 to 12% increase in the big ticket items in defense. That's very attractive. And so people say, well, what about my company who does services? Well, it depends on what you do in services. If it's the higher level professional services, we're going to be seeing a decline in that spending by about 12%. And that's about $47, $50 billion a year. That's a pretty significant decline in that area. Other white collar and certainly some blue collar services are actually going to be going up by 4 to 5, 6%.
So would cyber be, for example, something where the money's going up?
Yes. Huh. Yeah, it would be. And for sustainment of military equipment in military inventory, like depot operations, there's a significant amount of increase there too. There's a lot of deferred maintenance. You hear that term often. Certainly there is in military infrastructure, a lot in civilian infrastructure too. You think about the national parks, enormous amount of deferred maintenance there.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And so there actually is some dollars in here that's going to start addressing some of those requirements. Does that affect the contractors in the Washington area? Not necessarily the ones that work here, but the ones that work in more field locations, geographically dispersed locations. Yeah, some decent increases.
So the, you know, the sort of, I call it high-end professional services that you mentioned are going to decline. Is that, you know, is that a changing of priorities? Is it just saying we're going to spend more, let's say, on, you know, delivering the iron, the weapon systems versus not? I mean, what's driving that change?
Yeah, and that's something that's a little bit hard for me to read, because when I look at professional services budget requirements or budget requests in, you know, specific agencies, I see generally a decline overall. It's almost like OMB may have given some policy direction to say, you know, cut your support operations, your support contractors. You don't need to be dealing in this kind of fancy stuff, really advanced stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, R&D in the front end of a lot of things is still pretty important, but the other kinds of professional services you have to help you run things, not a high priority. So it seems to be kind of overall the government, like almost every agency seems to be taking that kind of cut.
Is that, do you think there's a connection between that and the, I mean, we started this show by talking about assisted acquisition, which is a form of shared service. Is this, do you think part of that might be, you know, the president's management agenda, sort of the push to how, to sort of leverage across the government and shared services, which also the Obama administration was started to focus on too. Is, do you think that could be?
And, I mean, and the Bush administration before that.
Yeah.
Yes. I see maybe a little of that, but I'm, and again, I call EPA the poster child. When you look at them cutting about a third of their spending. Now, I think that's going to be changing. Already the appropriators have resisted some of those changes. But anyway, that's what the budget request was, cutting about a third. Most of that cut is in sciences, scientific programs that support EPA, not in the implementation or enforcement of programs like Superfund or underground storage tanks or anything like that. It's really more in the science end of it. And you start to see some of that in USDA. You see some of that in HHS, NIH specifically. So those agencies, and NOAA even, within Commerce. So those agencies that have some of those higher level professional functions that require people with scientific disciplines.
Yeah, PhDs, like special.
Typically, yeah, or certainly domain expertise. You know, it's just like they want to spend that much money on it.
Right. Okay, and Ray, we're up at the last break. When we come back, we'll finish up our, you know, sort of budget discussion, and then we'll talk a little about, the release last week of the, reorganization of the executive branch, some interesting stuff there to talk about, and how realistic is it as well. My guest today is Ray Bjorklund. He is the president of Birch Grove Consulting, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Ray Bjorklund. He is president of Birch Grove Consulting. Awesome analysis and inspired insight. And Ray, let's finish up the budget discussion so we can get on to talk a little bit about the reorg plan, the executive branch reform plan. So just let's sum up the numbers and what may or may not happen here.
Yeah, again, what I'm generally estimating the likely case of spending, you know, while the president requested $902 billion, which includes the even some of the changes that Congress is starting to make in defense spending and then in the supplemental budget, you know, likely case out of all that is probably about $891 billion. And I say that because when the administration really pushes hard in one direction by making very strong requests or trying to make some radical changes, Congress usually resists that and, you know, doesn't give them everything they want. You can go down the National Defense Authorization Act and you look line by line, say, oh, okay, they requested five and, you know, the authorizers give them five. They requested seven, the authorizers give them seven. Requested eight and the authorizers gave them six. I mean, so there's some things where Congress is resisting it because they don't think the agency can really execute, or they may not think that the technology is mature enough, or they see how that agency has maybe wasted the money before and they want to see, give me the detailed spend plan before I give you any money.
Does the flip side of that happen too? Does Congress give more than? I mean, we talked about that earlier.
Yeah, so sometimes it all they do. And there used to be something called earmark. Yeah, I mean, it still sort of happens because and it's usually not necessarily geography specific, but it's more programmatic specific. So if there are people peddling influence into Congress saying, a really important program, you need to vote for this, even though the agency may not be anxious to move forward with that in that direction, sometimes there's pressure from outside that actually puts more money in the bill to do something.
Yes.
Procurement marketplace.
So you see about a billion, not million.
Yeah, and if things really go south, like if Congress really gets resistant to giving things, you know, I'd estimate about $864 billion,
okay,
which is a pretty big chunk down.
Right, from the 900 number, 902?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But generally, you know, if you look at that 891 number, that's about a 2.6 overall increase, annual increase, which is... Well, actually a two-year increase, which is actually pretty darn good because we're, you know, 2.6 of that much money is a lot of money.
Yes.
You know, and so even the investors out there, that the institutional investors starting to pay a lot more attention to the government contractor industry.
So I guess there is room for cautious optimism.
There is.
Okay.
That's why I call it that.
Well, now let's turn a little bit to the, in our final minutes, the executive branch reform plan or reorganization plan. Your initial impressions, Ray?
Well, the major document, you know, came out yesterday, summarizing it. We've had the leaks and other things happening already. And so I've skimmed through it, not read it page by page. And if this being kind of a segue from what we were talking about with respect to the budget, is that you've got the appropriators and the authorizers to deal with now. It's one thing for an executive branch like this administration to generate this kind of content, this reform, which on the surface, and again, I haven't read every word, but on the surface, a lot of what they're saying makes really good sense. And it looks like it could have some smart results economically, effectiveness, you know, sort of the comparative advantage again, mm-hmm. going back to our first segment. It looks really good. You know, and you know, there's about two dozen very specific changes that they're trying to make. But man, it makes me scratch my head. Like, how are the authorizers and appropriators going to buy into this thing? And then how are the agencies, working rank and file, employees going to buy into it? This is going to be really hard to implement, really hard to get authorization to do it.
So to your point, many of these instances, right, there's committee jurisdictions involved for specific entities in the executive branch that under this reorganization may or may not go away, that jurisdiction. So you're talking about changing people's oversight responsibilities, sort of a parochial kind of, you know, approach to it, addressing that. That's seems to me would be a big challenge.
Big challenge, because Congress is all about the power of the purse, and the power of the purse comes from those appropriators. It comes from those authorizers who have a whole lot of political equity because of their experience in a particular area, whether it's defense or whether it's human resources or financial management. That's where their expertise comes from, and that's where they built up their political equity over years to be able to sit on those committees. And it has a statutory foundation.
Right.
So that's where it's the resistance that I would see would come from Congress not being willing to totally revise those underlying statutes, some of which are well over 100 years old, and put the dollars all in the authority all into one statute. So, you know, if one of these initiatives is to put all kinds of food safety under one agency, so the Food Safety and Inspection Service of USDA and the Food and Drug Administration of HHS, you know, to come out together under one agency.
Seems to make sense to me, right?
Yeah, it makes good sense. And believe it or not, there actually might be some chance of doing that, because HHS has their authorities come from a set of statutes. FDA is almost the total independent standalone. Its authorities come from the Agriculture Committee.
Oh, okay. So that might one.
It's one that might work, but mm-hmm. you know, it's still a big change.
Right. So in a certain sense, what I think what you're saying here is that any kind of executive branch reorganization it would involve by necessity, in a certain sense, a congressional reorganization in terms of committee
yeah.
authority, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So you're going to have both branches on board to do huge amounts of change.
Sometimes I've talked to congressional staffers, and they'll say, that doesn't make any sense. And they'll basically say, sit down and shut up.
That's right. The way it's going to be. Right, yeah, exactly. just lastly, you know, when you're a contractor thinking about this reorganization and the potential of it, what are the opportunities? What are the things folks need to be thinking about? You could have more of that sort of professional services,
yes.
you know, people trying to figure out how to restructure things, right?
Yeah, I mean, even coaching and counseling, mm-hmm. you know, as a professional service. A lot of HR reforms are potential in this thing. Certainly, you talk about aligning enterprise business systems like financial management, getting everybody on the same sheet of music from this sub-agency and that sub-agency. And you kind of step back and look at the pain that's been for DHS, who took a couple of dozen sub-agencies and mushed them all together
yes.
and really crossed departmental lines. They still don't have it worked out. Yeah. It's still a work in progress.
Right. Well, you can even get down into, you know, like offices relocating potentially.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then, and then the furniture industry, you know, all that stuff could be impacted here along the way. So it's important for contractors to follow this very closely in terms of potential.
But also recognize that a lot of it may not happen.
Yes.
My gut says maybe 10% of what's been put on the table is probably going to be happening. And here's another little sidebar on it, is that the Trump administration in the 2019 budget, president's budget request, actually asked for a lot of this stuff already. Mm. So, you know, and you can already see in the committee hearings where they've been resisting this kind of activity. And it isn't just because of the authorizers and appropriators, but that's a factor here.
Yeah. Factor. Ray, great stuff. Today. I want to thank my guest today, Ray Bjorklund. He is the president of Birch Grove Consulting. Awesome analysis, inspired insight. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf. Only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.